Okay, welcome everybody. If it's your first or second time, my name is Steep, S-T-E-E-P, and the only reason that some people are here tonight is because they want to know how I got that nickname. So I may wait until next week. Now, I probably will tell you sometime today because word will get around because the other people who do know, because I threatened the same thing with them. So since there's new folks, I should just, I want to remind you a little bit of, or kind of review for just a second why we're here before we start our first little brief meditation. So this is the Discovering Buddhism module on how to meditate. And last time we talked about, first of all, why to meditate. Forget how to meditate. Why are we doing this? Anybody want to sum that up? We got lots of microphones we can share. Anybody want to sum up why to meditate? Well, it has something to do with our minds, give you that hint. And there's a lot of people who, you know, would like to, in one lifetime, some lifetime, become enlightened. That's one reason. So the only way, what are we enlightening? We're not enlightening this room. Enlightenment isn't something that happens to just our body. The whole way to reach enlightenment is through the mind. So it's the mind that has to change, the mind that has to be perfected. And it's through meditation that we become familiar with positive mind states. So from a Buddhist perspective, we are intimately familiar with our negative mind states because we've been practicing those for many, 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 many lifetimes. Whether you believe in reincarnation or not, you can certainly see in this lifetime how you've become familiar with certain ways of thinking, positive and negative. And then there's even super positive, right? We could have a superpower of being a good meditator. It would bring us to a whole nother level. But of course, we have to practice it. We have to get familiar, not just with meditation, but also with positive mind states. So I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, like how do those two go together? You know, quieting the mind and then having that quiet, more open mind become familiar with these other mind states. Because there's a lot of, you know, you've heard the analogy of like the nature of the mind is like the sky and all the stuff that's not that pure, endless, vast sky are like clouds in the sky. And the clouds get in the way of that pure sky. And so if that pure sky is also these positive mind states, we have to do a lot of extra work to kind of get those clouds out of the way so we can become familiar with what is our own true nature, that perfect, vast, knowing, sky-like nature of our mind. And so focusing meditation, calming meditation, allows those clouds to get out of the way so that we can become familiar with that. So there's these two things we'll talk about a little bit more in depth in a minute. But let's just start then. I'm going to lead you through a couple of just opening meditations to get us away from work and here. So just, you know, even with your eyes open, it doesn't matter. Just review for yourself why you're here. We talked also about this last week. Some people are hoping to become better meditators so that they can become calmer and that things don't kind of get them off their moorings so easily. You know, that's one reason a lot of people said that they want to come and meditate, to have more patience, to become a better person, happier person, more centered, more grounded in what they choose to be. So just think for a minute about your goal, what got you here. Kind of almost inhale that goal. Let it fill every cell of your being, all of your awareness. And then think about what it would be like if you accomplished that goal. How your day would be different. And if you accomplished that goal, how the people around you would also benefit from this more positive state of mind that you are abiding in. And so increase that intention, that goal, as high as you possibly can. And that's what we mean when we say setting your intention. And we're going to keep adding to this kind of setting our motivation each time. We'll keep adding some things to it. Okay, now we're going to do what's called 9-round breathing meditation. And again, each time we do this, each week, we're going to add different things to it. But right now, we're just going to do, I'm just going to show you what those, what it involves. So you'll take your right hand, and you can use any finger, but I typically use ring finger, and you're going to close your left nostril and breathe in through your right nostril, and then you'll exhale through your left nostril. And you'll do that 3 times. And then after you do that 3 times, you'll take your left ring finger, and then the opposite. You'll put that on your right nostril and breathe in through your left nostril, out through your right nostril 3 times. And then with both nostrils, you breathe in and out 3 times. So that's called 9-round breathing meditation. And when you exhale, at this point, just imagine you're exhaling anything that you want to get rid of from the day. Your fatigue, your anxiety, if you're not feeling well, physical discomfort, anything is just leaving. And when you're inhaling fresh, clean, perfect energy. Okay, so let's just do that then. You're on your own timing. So that's a good way just to hit the reset button whenever you need to and to start your meditation that way. And now we're going to do about 5 minutes of just focusing our awareness on our breath. And go over the, in your mind, let's go over the points of posture. So if you're sitting on the floor, you can be in a cross-legged or full lotus position or half lotus. In your chair, make sure that your feet are flat on the floor and kind of hip-width apart. And you would like to take your hands and place your left hand right below your navel, your right hand gently inside of it, and your thumbs just barely touching. And then you put that kind of oval egg-shaped, again, your hands are right below your navel, and you can rest them against your body. Your arms are out away from your body. And you want your back to be as straight as possible, not arched and tense, but it's just like lined up like coins. So your chin is tucked a little bit so that the back of your head continues on that straight line of the spine, rising up through the back of your head, the crown. And you put your tip of your tongue at the back of your teeth. Your eyes can be gently closed or a little bit open if it helps you to stay alert. And now for the next 5 minutes, you place all your attention on the sensation of your breathing. And for each full round of inhalation, exhalation, you'll count 1. You can go up to 5 or 10, depending on your preference. When your mind wanders, just gently bring it back, lovingly, kindly, bring it back to the count. If it helps also, you can label your thoughts, which will inevitably rise and go, there's thinking about tomorrow. And then let it just sink back down as though it's a wave on the ocean. And then you're trying to expand the distance between those waves. So there's a pause between the thoughts rising up. And then go back to the count. And I'll ring this bell when 5 minutes has passed. any questions or thoughts about the focus meditation? I forgot to mention last time, if you're using a cushion at home, it's important, or even if you're sitting in a chair, it's important to have a pillow or something under you so that your hips are a little bit higher than your knees or your legs. This will help keep your back straight and keep you more alert that way, keep your legs from falling asleep. So you might want to try that. And if you weren't here last week, we talked about really trying to find a time and a place in your house so that you can try and do this at least 5 minutes a day. As I told everyone last week, I had just bought a baritone ukulele. And last week I watched the little DVD about how to play it, and the guy was saying, you know, at least every single day, at least just even pick it up and play it for 5, 10 minutes. And of course, anybody who wants to play a baritone ukulele would think, yeah, of course, I need to pick it up every day and at least do a scale or something, right? And you'll definitely start to see some progress. So it's the same with, same thing, except there's no scales. And, you know, it's, I think from my practice, it was harder to see, because I'm using my mind to judge how my mind is doing. It was a lot harder than, oh, now I can play this song, now I can turn the page, I've learned all these notes. So you have to give yourself a lot of pats on the back for trying. And you will start to notice some progress. You will absolutely see, if you've had a lot of trouble staying awake, that with practice you will have less trouble. If you have a lot of trouble with your mind jumping all over the place, and we'll talk about some of the things to do for either of those problems. So I found an old test that I took years ago on this when I went through DB. I was like, oh, it's so handy to see my notes and I know of everything I wrote. And also last week we talked about how the Tibetan word for meditation is gom, which means to be familiar with something. And so we meditate all day long, all the time, constantly. It's just not necessarily on the right things. We become familiar with everything. We're very good at meditating on things, but we're not very good at meditating just on the nature of our mind, just kind of quieting our mind down and watching our breath and strengthening that muscle to focus. The reason that it's not just about focus, right? Because everybody needs focus. I mean, if you were robbing a bank, you would need focus. But in order to improve, in order for this goal to be achieved, which is the purpose of meditation, is to become familiar with positive states of mind and to decrease negative states of mind, then it's about taking that focus and using that on that topic, on the positive states of mind that we want. So, for example, you know, if you just meditated on counting and focus, there would definitely be benefit. You would be calmer. You would probably be calmer. You would have more focus. But it'd be kind of like if we were a basketball team and all we ever did was warm up. If we never played a game, we would never score any points, you know, but we would be in great shape. We'd be all ready, but we would never actually get on the court and do anything. And then on the other side, if we were just thrown on the court and told, here, go play, and we never warmed up, we'd probably not score too many points because we wouldn't even have a clue what to do. So those two things really go together hand in hand. For example, like my meditating, this is one of my answers I wrote to you, by meditating, for example, on the faults of anger and the benefits of patience, we are introducing step-by-step information we rarely familiarize ourselves with. Meditation on positive mind states allows for familiarity with them, and from there we can engage more readily in a different mode of relating. I got a good grade. So I just thought, oh yeah, let me go over that again, because that is why we're putting all this effort into it. And what the Buddha said is that there are two qualities needed for this kind of work. One is that ability to focus, and one is the ability to analyze. And put together then, it's like I said before, shining a light on something. You have the light, which is the focus, and then you have the topics that you're focusing on, those positive mind states. Without the two of them together, there's very little progress. It's either the thing you want to read is over there in the dark, or you just have this light, you know, it's just flashing around. So I guess that's enough for review. I want to introduce a little bit of information on something about focused meditation, because you'll hear about it, and some of you who've been through this course before, who are very familiar with meditation, I'm trying to balance giving a lot of different information. So some of you might have heard of something called shamatha meditation. That's the Sanskrit for what the Tibetans called shinye meditation. I wrote them down at the top. It means calm abiding. So in Tibetan, shi means like peace, and ye means like abiding. So it's peaceful abiding or calm abiding meditation. And this is the, some of you have seen this tanka, this painting out in the lobby. It's like a trail going up the top of the mountain. There's a monk and a monkey and an elephant, and it's showing, it was a way of teaching those same states of what I'm going to talk about now. And you could ask Geshe-la to do a much better teaching on this. I'm just giving you a little appetizer to see if it's something that interests you. So this is a very old teaching. It doesn't necessarily, I mean, there's lots of different religions that will practice calm abiding meditation and reach the same state. So it's a very powerful meditation practice, takes time. And if you look in certain books, like if you already have Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, it's like on the page 600s, you'll see all these, the environment that you need to be in. That's for somebody who's going to do a long retreat on them. Anybody can practice this in their home and get better and better at it. And then if you wanted to do a long retreat, you'll read about all of these kind of prerequisites and things that you need. So let's take a look at this, and I'll try to do my best to explain each stage. So the very first stage is fixing the mind. And we talked last week about when you're doing single-pointed meditation, what's really helpful to have is an object, that you become really familiar with this object. You could do it with a shell. I mean, this is what I'm saying. It could be anything. But from our perspective, it's better to use an object that you would consider like a holy object, something you're aspiring to, whatever religion you are. So if you're Buddhist, then you would take, for example, a Buddhist statue or something that's very attractive to you, whatever religion you are, or something that's, again, where you're going to focus all of your mind. You don't want to keep switching it. You want it to be the same thing so that you can get really familiar with all those details. And then when you're able to go into a meditative state and call up that image, you're already on the first part, which is fixing the mind. If you're able to see that image for a second, then you're at that first stage. What you'll notice, though, because we talked about this a little last week, it's an instant feedback, because you'll see like, oh yeah, I've now memorized this statue or photograph or whatever, I got it. You close your eyes and you'll be surprised where did it go, and why can't I get it to just stay still? So it's really instant feedback on how you're doing when you're meditation. But as long as you can see it at all, if you can recall the image, then you're already on the path. So it's really nice for me. It was very nice to know, okay, I'm not completely as bad as I thought. I can actually do number one. Number two is continually fixing it, because you can maybe do it for a moment, maybe a full minute, but it's hard. You'll see it's so hard because it's kind of jumping around, and your thoughts enter in and you can only see one part of it. So that's still at the first stage. If you can kind of hold that image for anywhere from like 30 seconds to a minute, then you'll find yourself having to continually fix your mind back to it. So then that's the second stage. And don't worry, some of these stages take, you know, it takes years and years, or if you're on a retreat, it doesn't have to take years and years, but so this would be continually fixing it because your mind is shifting, but you can do it for up to like 30 seconds to a minute. And then three, you'll see this written in different ways in different texts, but patchy fixation or continuous, repeated attention, which means that you can fix your mind on the object and you can immediately recognize when your mind has shifted. And then you're able to restore your mind to it. So you're able to hold it. And they said, one person was saying, generally for like maybe 100 breaths, you're able to really see that image without it disappearing. If you, like sometimes what I would notice is, oh, it's there, but I'm also thinking about all these other things, kind of like this outline of the object is there. And sometimes they describe that as like water running under something. You're almost seeing it like as a reflection in the water, but your thoughts are it's not crystal clear. So then that's more like patchy fixation. But the good thing is you're able to recognize it. You're not just drifting and thinking you're doing it. You're actually, oh, no, my mind has shifted away. Then the fourth stage is good fixation or close attention. You're able to maintain that focus without losing hold of the object at all for an hour. And the thing is that it feels good. Like when you get a glimpse of it, it's not like, oh my God, why do I have to stare at this thing for so long? It's not like that. It's just, it feels good. Because one of the things that they'll say that results in this is a kind of pliancy of the body and the mind. You're not sitting there going, oh, my legs, I've got a whole another hour to go. It's not like that. Everything changes in you. It's like you feel like you're in this fresh air and everything is wonderful. I have not done that for an hour. I'm just telling you what I've read. The moments that I get it, though, it's that kind of like high, like it's not full of effort. The fifth one is called becoming disciplined. The other one I've seen is called tamed attention. That means there's a deep tranquility. And there's these subtle forms, and this is what happens when you get further down this path. There's these subtle forms of laxity or dullness. Remember last time we were talking about how either we're dealing with our what we call elephant mind, kind of our sinking mind, when we get really tired when we're trying to meditate, or our excited mind, which we call monkey mind. Those are the two kinds of minds, and you'll see them represented on that drawing that we wrestle with. There's those two states of mind we're very familiar with. When we get even really good at meditation, we can hold that object for an hour. There's these subtle, still those states of mind are there, but they're more subtle. We're used to the very coarse elephant and monkey mind, really big in the room. But even when you're able to hold a meditative object for an hour, they say that there's these more subtle forms of it that you would begin to recognize. And so the tamed, the fifth stage, is that there's this deep peace and tranquility. And there's these subtle forms of laxity. This is a state that's dangerous because you may think you've achieved calm abiding. And the practitioner may give up thinking, I got it. And actually, because it feels so good. It feels so wonderful. But actually, there's still these subtle, stages of, laxity that need to be worked with. So the person has to generate the wish to go even higher in their meditative practice. So then the sixth stage is pacified attention or becoming peaceful. And that means the person has been able to subdue most of these mind states, but prone to subtle excitement. So they've been able to subdue most of the sinking mind, the sleepy mind, the dullness, but now there's subtle excitement that's just on the edge of their attention. And they have to engage in some rigorous training to get to the seventh one, which is very pacified, or becoming a fully pacified attention, which means you can recognize the very rare and finer states of subtle excitement. And then you're at single-pointed meditation, which is the eighth one, which means you can reach these very high levels of concentration with only slight effort and without interruption of subtle thinking mind or excited mind for the entire session. And the entire session, that's usually like 3 to 4 hours. And right around these states, sometimes again, the practitioner gets a little distracted because they're feeling so peaceful, they become very psychic, and if they're not careful, they don't recognize that there's still these stages to go. And so then why is there a ninth one if you've already reached this one? Well, the eighth one, you're able, with some slight effort, to reach that mind state. The ninth one, you don't need any effort. You don't need any effort at all. You're in, it's an effortless state of absorbed concentration and can hold up for 4 hours without a single interruption, without any of the subtle dullness at all. Sounds good. I think it's, and if you're going to read more about this, they talk about there's five obstacles to reaching these states. And I'll just list them for you now. I mean, I can think of about 500 for myself, but they probably fall in each of these categories, laziness being the first. And laziness doesn't mean just like, oh, I'm tired. Laziness is like, I can't do that. That's a form of laziness. Like, I'll never be able to do that. And so, I mean, when Geshe is kind of pushing me, he'll say, okay, so you can't go on a retreat right now, but you can do this. You can still practice this so that when you do have time, it'll come much more easily to you. Then forgetting the instructions. So you're meditating on some of these things, but you're forgetting the instructions. That's the second obstacle. The third obstacle is the laxity, the sluggishness, coarse and subtle laxity. The fourth one is non-application of the antidotes. There's all these antidotes to each of these obstacles so that you can keep moving forward, and you're not applying them. That's an obstacle. And then the fifth obstacle is you're over-applying them. And I remember when I first read this, I was like, what in the world is they talking about? Well, when you start meditating, you can kind of see that sometimes I remember thinking, oh, this is what they mean by kind of applying, like you tighten it up a little bit. You feel so kind of loosey-goosey and everything's kind of wavy. You go, okay, I'm going to really tighten this up a little bit. And sometimes it's too tight. It's like this, it makes you kind of excited. So you want to try to relax it a little bit. And it's just this constant, just like tuning the ukulele, except there's no little tuner to help me. You're just constantly kind of tweaking it to get it tighter or looser, or tighter or looser until finally it's perfect pitch. Have any of you heard of those kids in Medjugorje not long ago, maybe 20 years ago, who are having these visions of the Virgin Mary? Okay, I saw these documentaries on these kids, and I read a lot about them, where they were going into these incredibly amazing states where they were claiming they were having this vision. And these scientists went up to test them because there was all, and of course nobody believed them. And they hooked them up to all these machines, and they would spontaneously, even if these kids weren't together, go into this state at the same time where they would fall to their knees. Nothing could distract them. They would shine lights, headlights in these kids' eyes. Their pupils wouldn't change. They would poke them with pins. They would blast these poor kids. They would blast horns in their ears, and they would show by having them hooked up to all this equipment that they weren't registering this. They weren't hearing this. They weren't seeing anything else. They were somewhere else. So I described all this to Geshe-la, and he goes, oh, they're in single-pointed meditation. Now, from his perspective, they've already maybe done all this hard work for many, many lifetimes, so then this was just the tipping point in this lifetime. They were able, without much effort, to get to that state. So when I was reading about Shamatha meditation and achieving that final state, they're saying the same thing, that when you're really in that zone and you're really there, nothing can distract you. You're so, again, single-pointedly focused on something that nothing distracts you. So that helped me because I didn't have any kind of understanding of, well, what would that be like? And then I watched that whole documentary, and then when Geshe-la said, that's it, that's the final state, they've reached that. Oh, okay. Then I have one other example that came to me this week. You know, it's interesting when you talk about something, how kind of the synchronicity of running into it all week long, it seemed like everything I listened to had some application for meditation. I listened to these podcasts. I was listening to Radiolab. I was looking at some old ones, and there was this one called Loops, and it was all about things that are in loops and circles and cycles. And this woman was talking about how she's in chronic pain. She suffers from head and shoulder injury and all this pain in her head and neck. And for many, many years. So she's kind of researched pain in and out. And she noticed that when she's in a movie, especially a scary movie, she doesn't feel the pain. You know, her mind is so focused on whatever's going on screen, she's in no pain. But when she walks out of the theater, it's back in a flash, and it's worse than before. So she somehow, I don't remember some of these minor details of the story, but she hooked up with this doctor who was researching pain also, and he had this contraption where he said what he wanted to show people is how connected the mind is to our pain and our experiences. So he thought if he could show people what was going on with this part of the brain that registers pain and experiences pain, he could maybe help them. And somehow, again, I don't know the details, but he has this screen so they can see. And so when she was experiencing pain, she could see this image that would come up like fire. So he'd done this little graphic to show, because that's how people feel the pain. It was like fire. And as she saw that, she's like, yeah, that is how it feels. And it became this kind of loop, because she says when she's in pain, she's angry at the pain, which makes it worse. And then the fire got worse. And then she's feeling more anger, and she's having more like angry thoughts at the pain, and it was getting higher and higher. So he was hoping that people could also do the reverse. So she said she had been reading a lot about, actually she saw some show on TV about these Hindu monks who were, or priests or whatever, were engaged in this religious ritual where they were putting like spears through their cheeks and tongues, and they were, she said, they didn't look like they were in any kind of pain. So she thought, becoming a Hindu is not going to change that for me, but I have to figure out how to work with my mind so I can also be as happy as they are even though I'm in pain. So she was hooked up to this machine, and she started reading all about these different She's half Jewish, half Christian. She started reading about all these different martyrs and saints from these two faiths. And what she noticed was, as she was reading about their painful experiences where they weren't actually feeling pain, she looked at the monitor and that fire was going down. And she was so impressed by the stories of these different saints and martyrs and what they went through and how they weren't feeling the pain. They weren't feeling this fire because they felt completely safe and full of whatever their faith was, right? So just reading their stories, that pain started to go down, 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 down. So the more she would read, she said she just started reading constantly to help that. Then the interviewer asked her, so do you think that you could do that if you weren't hooked up to those machines? And she said, no. And I wanted to shout, yes, you can. What about all the people you're reading about? They didn't have any of those machines. But what hit me is that this is exactly what single-pointed meditation is about. You have that image now in front of you. It is instant biofeedback about where your mind is. It's not about pain, but it's about the focus of your mind. How concentrated is your mind? And the more you develop that muscle, the stronger that image is going to be. It's the same thing as that machine. It's the same thing as going to the gym and being able to move that little from 10 pounds to 15 pounds to 20 pounds. It's instant feedback. And so I would encourage you to find that object because I forgot to mention we are going to have a practice day in January where you can come here all day and we'll, not all day, it's 3 hours. It'll feel like all day. But we'll try to make it fun. And we'll be practicing some of these things. So try to find an image that you're ready to use and you can start practicing on your own in the next few weeks and we'll keep working with that. Okay, any questions? Anything? I know I'm throwing a lot out there. Yeah. There's a mic.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how the object we choose, should it be intricate or simple? You know, I know you mentioned the picture of the Dalai Lama, but an object, like, I know a shell doesn't...
Right.
You know what I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, what I've just heard is stick with whatever you're going to pick. And that it's, you know, from... Because you're going to be fixing your mind on it so much, it should be something that inspires you and is virtuous in that way. I don't think it matters too much, although probably super duper intricate might throw you off, you know, might intimidate you. You'd be surprised though how tricky your mind is with things, no matter how simple. Okay, I'm just going to have a stick. I'm just going to meditate on this. And your mind is going to play all kinds of tricks with you, like, oh, but wait a minute, did it have this on this side or this? Because you'd think this is simple, but it can be, it's very intricate in some ways. And you have to really talk your mind down from freaking out about it. You know, it's like just, so I did that with this picture I had. It's like, oh my goodness, the glasses, the this, the that, the hair, the nose. And then I thought, but you know, when I hold it like this and look at it, I'm just looking at the whole thing and let my mind try to do that. You know, try to like, so I would say as long as it's not super, super ornate, you know, so that you can really basically recall it. There's also other tricks you can play with your mind, like even if you're not doing that kind of, if you're just counting your breaths and you're having a lot of trouble, stop. Or, you know, what'll happen though is I'll say, okay, in 3 more breaths, I'm going to quit. And it's right as I quit that it all comes together. And so that, you just have to play these games with your mind. Or like, okay, I'm just going to do this for 5 minutes and then get up for 10 minutes and then 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And, you know, work with whatever your mind is throwing at you. If you're using an object and you struggle from kind of sleepiness, then make that object in your mind's eye really bright, like you're shining a huge flashlight on it. So I would do that too at times. I'd hold the picture there and get a light and just shine it on it, and then I'd close my eyes and try to also put all this light in my mind's eye around the picture. If you find yourself getting kind of overly excited and you have a lot of monkey mind, feel the image's weight. You know, so it's a heavy statue, or just feel that the object that you've picked is very heavy, even if it's not. That'll help keep your mind grounded. Yeah.
My question is sort of based on the same question as before, but you know, I've over the past few years I've learned to to pray and somewhat meditate to something greater than me. And to this day, have I yet to come up with any sort of image or what it is. Every once in a while, I was raised Catholic, every once in a while that vision of, you know, God comes in my mind, but I it feels that I'm not praying to that anymore. I'm more or less praying to something greater than myself, and that's and I have no visual for it, and I can't figure it out. What do you suggest about something like that?
Oh boy. Ay, ay, ay. Have you been coming here? Is that what?
This is my first time here. So
oh.
I've never been like a real meditation.
Okay. Okay. Well, keep coming if you. It just depends. I mean, it's such a hard question to answer because everybody has kind of a different mindset about that. You know, from my perspective, I've taken refuge in the enlightened mind, right? So that I see is greater than myself. And the images on the altar are examples of a being who achieved that state of full enlightenment. But when I take refuge in that, or I'm trying to reach that state also. So everything up here really is, from the way I'm looking at it, a picture of your future self. You know, that's what the mind can accomplish that. And meditating helps train our mind to be able to climb that mountain to get there. And if you're wanting a visual of, I mean, that's why there's all these images of Buddhas to inspire people who believe that that's a way to go. But every religion has examples of people who have accomplished those states. And so whatever you eventually feel inspires you to become as best as you can be, that would be the best image to use, you know? Yeah.
Well, in years past, I've either had or observed others in classes on relaxation.
In years past, women who are preparing to have a baby, they'll get their breathing down and they'll be told to have an image. And the image might be an attractive, calm place they've seen once. Not an object necessarily, but a park, a stream, whatever,
right.
A forest. Will that work, or do you specifically want an object?
I think that works to help to do that, to calm your mind down, and also especially when you're dealing with pain. When you want to really focus your mind and you want to be able to be aware that it's not shifted, then you're going to need something pretty clear. If it's a nice landscape, you can make up things. You can add a house and a tree, and you know, it's going to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. But that's a different kind of meditation, and we're going to do one of those in a minute. But for that single-pointed, you know, you're going to take one object and know it inside out, upside down, so that then you're going to close your eyes and just try to hold that image steady. And that'll be different than seeing a beach. Yeah.
So when you have this object, it's three-dimensional, but it's something that you can look at from several angles. So are you fixating on like one angle first and then shifting it around and then learning a new side of it? Or
yeah, I would just stay with the way that you see it in front of you. You know, so if it's a statue, like so mine's a photograph, and sometimes, yeah, my mind's like, oh, what's the frame? And, you know, it's just so... Your mind can drive you nuts with this stuff. But when I get in the zone then, I don't have any, all those questions just drop away and I just see it. Just like I would see it if it was on my wall. I wouldn't be thinking about like all these things. So I would say, especially in the beginning, you know, just have the statue, whatever, there and look at it as you would if it was sitting right in front of you, level from this area. So it's right there. Yeah. And just really get to know it, look at it. And start with that. Okay. Yeah. We're getting good at these mics.
Quick question. And when is it that we should do this type of meditation or another type of meditation? Mm-hmm. So should we start with concentrating on our breath first and become good at that first? mm-hmm. and then going to the single point,
mm-hmm.
or when do we do that?
Okay, that's a great question. I think it depends on where you are in your practice, but I would say get comfortable with the counting meditation, and then you can start, like, say, for the first 5 minutes just doing the counting meditation, and then move to the object. Or do that 9-round breathing meditation and then move to the object. What I noticed for me was when I finally could kind of hold that object for a little bit of time, it would make the counting so much easier, and vice versa. So I never gave up either, but I tried to put more of my attention on the focus one once I got some confidence with the breathing one. Because for me in the beginning, I couldn't figure out why my mind was moving so much. And when I started to see that there's this pattern, like the thoughts come up, and then as soon as I recognize the thought, it kind of settles down. And then another thought comes up. And so then I could see there's actually this kind of little valley between those thoughts. And then the point is to try to make that valley, you know, rest in that valley, just like labor pains come and go, and you rest between the labor pains. Same thing with the thoughts. So if you can get to the point where you can see that kind of wave of thoughts, and you're able to say, oh, there's a thought. Oh, there's the valley. There's a thought. Then you can start to. I think you'll feel more confidence on putting it on an object. But that leads me to another point, which is that some people ask the same thing about analytical meditation and focus meditation. The things I've read and what Geshe has told me is you can do them in tandem. Some people say, oh, you might just should do focus meditation and forget the analysis, or just do analysis. But you can do these in tandem, and you'll see them working together to help each other, help them, both of them.
But your advice would be perhaps to become good at focus meditation before you go into analytic meditation?
No, I think you can do. We're going to do both here today.
Okay.
You'll see. I think they'll each kind of prod the other one on. They'll each support each other. Because we're doing analytical meditation all day long anyway, so we might as well go ahead and do some positive. And you'll see that the work that you're doing to strengthen the mind's ability to focus is going to help you in your analytical meditation. And then one of the differences, like somebody asked me before, well, you know, at work I do a lot of analysis. I've got to read these things and write reports. What's the difference between that and the analytical meditation you do here? Well, the main difference is that, like, when most of us, when we're at work, we're also doing a couple of other things. We're drinking some coffee and answering the phone, and somebody just walked in the room, and, you know, yes, we are analyzing something, but we're easily distracted as well. Whereas here, we're going to really try not to be as distracted. The other thing that happens with single-pointed meditation, you know, have you ever heard mountain climbers who say they just feel so good when they're climbing that mountain because their life is on the line. All of their attention is just, you know, getting to whatever those pins in that rock and then the thing on the whatever. And, you know, we don't have to go climb a mountain. But what helps them is that knowledge that they could fall and die. That's got their complete and utter attention. Just like when we're driving at night and we get a little tired and we almost veer off the road and then we're like wide awake for the next couple minutes at least, right? So, some meditators will say it's important first to scare yourself, you know, to pretend there's a snake in the room, that you should be that alert in your meditation. And, I mean, some people will use something like how close death is or something to kind of get them jazzed up to really start to work on their meditation. So there's different things you can try like that. Anything else? Yeah, right behind you.
Suppose you've decided to set a certain routine, like a certain time of day, but when that time comes, you feel extremely agitated or you feel in a really bad mood. What would your guideline be,
mm-hmm.
to continue or to kind of try to get cooler first?
That's a good question. If you notice that it's continuing happening, that every time it comes time to meditate, that's happening, it's probably your mind playing a trick on you. You might try, like, you might start with the 9-point meditation and see it, 9-round meditation and see if that helps. Because one thing when you're exhaling is to imagine all that agitation leaving you, like in the form of smoke. When you're exhaling, just sending that all away. But if it's too much, you know, if last week we talked about it's important to have success. So if you notice this is not a good time because something came up, then don't. don't meditate then. Try to find the best time so that at least you can have some success. Sometimes, like for me, I need to do something physical before I sit and meditate, you know. So I do so much sitting at work. If I sat down right away, it would be too much. So if I'm having a lot of that, what you're describing, I might need to walk around the block or run around the block or do something physical first and then sit down. So play around with it and see what helps. You might try with the 9-round seat. Does that immediately help everything or not, you know? I've noticed for myself that sometimes when I think I'm not going to be able to meditate because I'm upset about something, it actually had their opposite effect on me, you know. And as long as I'm good with calm to my mind, like I have to be gentle with my mind. If my mind is having trouble with it, then I want to treat it like I would a child and like, it's okay, you know, you don't have to do this right now. Let's go for a walk and then come back, you know. Yeah, I think as long as you're kind to yourself.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. And I'd love to, you know, for people to, because you're your own laboratory, so it'd be helpful if you took notes for yourself, because you'll forget and you won't see the progress you've made. You know, like now when I think back and I told you that story how I had to stand up just to have like 2 minutes of productive meditation, that seems like, but I struggled with that for a very, very long time. And so in order to kind of give yourself some confidence and treat yourself well, you might just take some notes each day and see how it's going. All right, well, why don't we try a guided meditation and get comfortable, but sitting up comfortable. If you've done this one with me before, then when we get to this one place, you can just try a different focus of it. You'll know what I mean when I get there. But we're going to meditate a little bit on impermanence. And an impermanence sometimes freaks us out. Like, oh my goodness, nothing lasts. But really, it's only because things are impermanent that we can change our minds, that we can have a better mind. So otherwise, we'd be stuck with exactly what you got right this minute. And so impermanence is really a beautiful, wonderful thing that allows us to change our mind. And if our mind is endless and beginningless and its nature is pure, then because of impermanence, we can reach that state. That's the wonderful thing to remember about impermanence. It's not just that things are leaving, it's that things are also arriving. Okay, so check your posture, all those points that we talked about, and, you know, have your hands in a comfortable position. If that position isn't comfortable, just get them comfortable and your elbows out a little bit away from your body. And just put all your awareness on your breathing for a moment. Just do several, count your breaths for about up to 5. Now become aware of your body. Think of its many different parts, your arms, legs, head, skin, blood, bones, nerves, muscles. Probe them with your mind. Contemplate the nature of these things, their substance, their texture, their shape and size. Be aware of the body at work, the movement that's going on right now in your body, each moment, the ebb and flow of your breath, the beating of your heart. Be aware of the body even at its most subtle level, its cellular structure. Entirely composed of living cells moving about, reproducing, dying, disintegrating. Your body is always in motion. Now turn your attention to your mind. It too is composed of countless parts, thoughts, perceptions, feelings following one after the other endlessly. Simply watch this ever-changing flow of mental experiences. How what appears solid and static is constantly moving. And it's actually as though there's a river of you. And now moving away from the body and the mind for a minute, think of one building, home, house, structure that you're familiar with. It could be one from when you were younger, or a place that you live in now or visit often, or even this building, something that you know fairly well. And just pick one and imagine it in your mind's eye. Go in the door, take a look at how it looks right now, the arrangement inside, what kind of furnishings, what's on the floor, what kind of lighting it has, windows. How big it is, and walk around it on the outside. Where is it? Are there trees? Sidewalk? What does it look like on the outside? Walk all the way around it. And then go back in time about 5 to 10 years and take a look at that building in time in your mind's eye 5 to 10 years ago. And if you don't know, just imagine what did it look like then 5 to 10 years ago. Go inside. Take a look at the furnishings then. What was on the floor? Were the rooms the same? The walls, the decorations. The people it housed or who worked there or whatever. And walk around outside. What did it look like? Colors, smells, sights, sounds, the location. And now go back another 10 years, 10 or 15 years from that period of time. What did this building look like then? Can you imagine it? Can you go inside and take a look? What was inside then? The people, the furnishings, the colors, the sounds. And the outside. And now go back 50 years in time. Was the building there? What did it look like? What was there? What did it look like? The surrounding area, inside, the colors, the people, the environment. Can you imagine it? And now go back 100 years. imagine what it was like then. If it didn't exist, what did? What did it look like? What did the environment look like? And now go back another 100 years. What can you imagine was there? Take a look all around in all directions. Who do you see? And now go back as far as you'd like, imagining that piece of land as far back in time as you want. Now come to the present in that building and go forward 5 to 10 years, imagining what the building that you currently know so well, what will it look like in 5 to 10 years? What will 5 to 10 years have possibly done to change that building? Go inside. Does it look the same? The people, the furnishings, the changes that this time will bring to it, and look outside what might have changed in 5 to 10 years. Go forward another 10 years, and now we're 20 to 25 years in the future. What will this building look like? Is one that you know so well. And now go as far forward in the future as you'd like, following any possibility that you choose to pick. Follow this building, this part of land, into the future. And then come back to the present in this building that you know so well. And just note how it feels since you've been looking at this river of building, this endlessly changing construction. The fluidity of this building. How does it feel now when you're standing in it? Having been focusing on the impermanence and changeability of you, your body, your mind, the building, the land, the whole ball game. Take a minute to just absorb that experience of impermanence. Okay, good, we have a little time. So what I'd like to do is get you into groups of like 5, so we can have like a 15-minute conversation in your groups. When you get in these groups, I want you to just talk a little bit about that meditation, as well as anything about your meditation practice that you'd like some feedback with. You know, like, have you been able to pick a time and a place in your life, in your house, in your car, wherever you're going to meditate? Try to describe that to the other people in your group, because this can be like your little cell, your little pod that you can get some feedback and support with throughout this class, because it'll just hopefully help. And you don't have to. Like, if you go around, if you're in your group and you don't feel like talking, that's fine. That's totally fine. But let's try this for 15 minutes. Okay, so turn around, find like groups of five. Joanna's going to help. Maybe Joanna and Kim will help me help you all get into groups. And I'll let you know when you're about halfway through. Yeah, introduce yourselves. It's a great way to get to know people, because you know a lot more. There's a lot of knowledge in this room. You want to go there? Good. Okay. He's with you. I'm just trying to make sure people have groups. Great. Okay. Okay, so go ahead and get started talking. I'll let you know when you should be about halfway through, okay? So introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about that exercise.
Yeah.
Take about 5 minutes to finish up.
I'm sitting at it. 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 I'm sitting at it.
Okay, and try to wrap up so you can come back to the larger group. Okay, and y'all did great. Great. This is the easiest I ever got a group into small groups. And you all were like really chatty, so. And I had some great little snippets of conversations, and it seemed to be a common theme was how to find the time, right? Or you know, losing that practice, because it's tricky. Somebody told me it's like if you had a thorn stuck in your hand, you could use another thorn to get it out. It's kind of like our mind. We can use our minds to help our minds, but, you know, they're slippery. They're slippery, and they kind of find different obstacles come up. And then there's different, we'll talk next time, too, about what are the different ways to help those different obstacles that arise. But finding time, if you do just find 5 minutes in the morning before you know, rush off, or I sometimes just sit in my car for 5 minutes at work because work can be so insane. I'll just go sit in the car and just sit there for 5 minutes, and it changes everything. And remember, I showed this YouTube last time for those of you who weren't here. I mean, I'm sorry, TED Talk. I remember the name of it, but I'll try.
Meditation Change Yo.
Oh, that's right. Meditation Change Yo. But it was Change Something. Change Your Life? Okay. It was a Zen priest who was talking, and the title came up, it looked like Change Yo. But Change You Something, Change Your Life. And one of the things he said is that he often forgets, you know, like he'll get agitated about something, and then as soon as he meditates, he goes, oh, right. He goes, it's like almost like cheating. So that's why I'd say to your question, you know, try it and see, you know, experiment and see if it does help. If it makes things worse, then stop and go, you know, try to do something else. I saw this other TED Talk called, this one I know, How to Be Brilliant Every Day. So that caught my attention. I want to give you a little summary of what he said before we end. So he was talking about how he teaches these classes or something, and he was saying that he was listening to this golf pro, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was having a terrible, what do they call those things? Tournament. I mean, he was like doing really well, and then it just went downhill. And he had won it a year before, and he just couldn't figure out why. Everything was going just like last time, and this guy leading the TED Talk saying, I know exactly what the problem was, you know, I know exactly what the problem is. So that guy, he said, is focusing totally here on his performance. And we all have, you know, we're all out there performing in one way or another. And he was focusing on that, no matter how much he could, and his actions to get there. And so this is kind of like a house, and this is all above ground. And so mostly, he said, people like that will try to use their thinking. Like, I know I'm a good golfer, you know, and I know how to hold this, and I know what to do, and I know, blah, 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 blah. They use their thinking to try to change their actions so that they can have a good performance, right? And so kind of below the ground is the feeling. And sometimes these two kind of flip-flop, and we can affect, they're very interchangeable, and we can affect our feeling by how we're thinking and vice versa. But he said, you know, a lot of people just stay in this realm. He said, but there's something even below that that's affecting all of that. And he was talking about our physiology. So he was saying we're constantly getting tons of streams of information from our physiology, what we just ate, you know, or we're sick, or I had another one. But he was talking about like you just ate a big cupcake. And so now you're getting all this information like, yeah, I got sugar going on here, you know. So all this information from our physiology is affecting all of these things. And we're in order to have a good performance, we're usually just staying right in here and not working with here. And so what he was saying is one stream of information that we're getting all the time is our heart rate. And we're not really focusing on that. We're not trying to affect that. And that's what he's focusing on. And he does a lot of work with your heart rate, your breathing, centering yourself by using your breathing? Why do you think there's all this information about how yoga changes all of this for people? Because it's focusing on their breathing and centering them, right? So yoga works for some people, but that breathing he's talking about, just centering on your breathing, is going to be changing all of these things. Whereas we're sitting here going around in a circle and sometimes not going down to that place first and then seeing how all these things are affected by changing our physiology, which is, when I listened to him, I was like, yes, this is why, to me, like, the ancient Buddhist teachers are like mind training geniuses, right? So they're like, yeah, we're just going to focus on your breathing. We're just going to close a nostril, try to change this whole physiology first, and then see, and then we're going to put our thinking on something. So this exercise you all just did on meditating on impermanence, you know, when you first read about it in a book, you're like, why do I need to close my eyes and think about that? Yeah, duh, I get the fact this building used to be a fish store, and before that it was just a piece of land, and before that, blah, 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 blah. Why do I need to close my eyes and meditate on it? But isn't it a different experience? I don't know about, but I mean, it's a very different experience when you slow your breathing down and you sit there and just close and go through this whole visualization. You're familiarizing yourself with this impermanence in a very different way than if you were just flipping through a book going, yeah, I get it. Because you've moved down into here. And all that stuff I was talking about in the beginning of using your focus and the topic together. Now you've had an experience of impermanence in a completely different way than just here. So we're going to do more meditations like that, and my hope is that, you know, as you'll combine, like, the going to the gym of strengthening the muscle of concentration with the result of taking that concentration on a topic. And the two will go together, and they'll just keep kind of improving together. So remember last time I said your homework was to find a place where you're really agitated or distracted and do that kind of meditation of, like I did with my mom. Anybody do that? Oh, tell me about it. There's a mic. Here we go. Right here. Right next to you. You're surrounded.
Last Friday, I had to go to my husband's. Let me see if anybody's there.
Nobody tell.
His corporate Christmas party.
Uh-huh.
And I dread it every year because it's a really dress-up thing, and I'm just not that kind of person. Most of the people there just are nice, because they have to be for that couple of hours. And everybody's kind of talking about how great their kids are and how wonderful they're in college and they're going to Yale and all this stuff. And but this time, before I went, I decided that I would do that equalizing meditation. On, so I picked out a person that was, I felt like, was my enemy that from previous parties. And then someone who I didn't know, and then someone who I really liked that consistently went to the party, and I did that. And then when I went in to the party, it was like, it was no big deal. I actually had a good time.
Wow.
And I didn't care, you know.
Right.
It was great.
Awesome.
I even stayed longer than I usually do.
So you in summary, you familiarized your mind before you went in there. You got your mind ready, just like doing the warm-ups before a basketball game. You familiarized your mind with equanimity.
Mm-hmm.
And she went in there and experienced this completely differently as a result. Awesome. Awesome. I love that story. Anybody else want to share one? There's going to be lots of experiences that you'll be able to use this, given the holidays are coming or here. So think of one this week for yourself, you know, grocery stores, parking lots, wherever it is, and, you know, where can you practice something, whether it's that, okay, all these other beings would like to be just as happy as I am and have that same parking place I want, or the one that I was talking about before, about how kind of cute everybody is if they were really related to you. You know, if that was really my mother or my favorite aunt over there, they would just look so cute, you know. And think about that. I have a friend from work who really enjoys kind of picking on people mentally in her mind. I mean, she likes to take pictures of clothing that people are wearing and then put it on Facebook. I'm like, oh, that's just so, first of all, so mean, you know. She makes some comment about, look at these shoes, and puts it on Facebook. And so we were talking about how she's just kind of practicing, it's just like that loop, that's endless loop. She's practicing her own unhappiness, you know, and her own kind of criticism of people. So then So she was doing that to somebody in the store, and I was like, it's really hard for me to even hear it. And I was having the complete opposite experience. I was thinking this person was so adorable. And so then, you know, we actually kind of play off each other now, because, I mean, I'm always so shocked. And she goes, okay, tell me what you see adorable about this person. And so then I do. And then she's like, oh, I kind of see that. I kind of get it. So now she's kind of reminding me to do that more often, because she's always doing the opposite. So think about some place, and you can bring in a story that might help the rest of us. And if you want to practice more of the impermanence, did anybody have a question about that whole exercise in impermanence or a negative reaction to it that you want to talk over before we end? Yeah.
I had a question. We discussed this with our little group here. When you said go back 200 years or whatever it was, you know, I lived in Northern Virginia, and I know there were some really, really, really bad Civil War battles in and around where I was. And that's what I envisioned.
Right.
It's some horrible battle on the land that the house I grew up on is now on. Is that a bad thing to think about? Should I try to change my thought towards maybe something happier, or is it the truth?
No, I mean, unless it freaks you out, it's more like a casual observer. You're kind of a time traveler, right? So, you know, as long as you're not stuck there, you're just kind of like time traveling and seeing that, yeah, the reality of history is not always so. You know, if you went back as far as you wanted, you could be with some dinosaurs on that land as well. So, you know, it's the whole point is to see how fluid things are and how much we think that things are very solid and static, and how they're not. They're just constantly shifting and changing and moving and progressing. And that when the negative side of impermanence kind of gets us down and we see the things that are leaving, the thing that helps us is to know that things arise, that because of impermanence, something else can come into place. Something else can arise. You can become enlightened because of impermanence. Okay, so we're going to kind of wind up. If you have questions about some of these stages that I wrote on the board before, you know, I'm happy to give you some other material to read and some books. And for those of you who weren't here, I highly recommend this book called How to Meditate, A Practical Guide. It's by Kathleen McDonald, and it's out there in the bookstore. You don't have to read it, but it does have a lot of good information in there about your meditation practice and antidotes to different problems you're having, but I'll be going over those as well during the classes. I want to give a little pitch. Now, this class is totally free, and I'm not trying to pressure anybody into doing anything, but I also just want to mention that this center, and the reason we have the lights on and the heat on and all this good stuff, and we can bring Geshe Gelug. If you haven't met Geshe Gelug, he'll be back teaching, I guess, this Sunday. Is it this Sunday? Yeah. So he's a wonderful teacher, trained in a monastery since the age of 7. He speaks English. I mean, he came to this country, 1999, 2000, and he lived in my house for 9 years. And that's where I got the nickname Steep, because there's no F in Tibetan. And so he kept calling me Steep, and I thought he was saying Steve, and I was like, oh, my name's not Steve. You can call me Steve, but it's not my name. He's like, I know. And the next day he'd say, hey, Steep. So I was like, me? My name's not Steve. He goes, I'm not calling you Steve, I'm calling you Steep. I said, why is that? And he goes, because you're trying to go straight up. You're going to go straight up. And I said, well, steep can also mean straight down. So, just so you know. And I said, you can call me that. Then it'll remind me that that's kind of my choice, whether I'm going to go straight up or straight down. So that stuck, and I like it. And anyway, you can call me Stephanie or Steep. That, now you know the secret. Now you don't have to wait till the very end. I usually only tell people this at the very last class. So anyway, Geshe lived with me for 9 years. I feel very lucky because I got to have all these wonderful adventures teaching him things like English and how to use the refrigerator and things like that. I used to come home and I would explain that you put the food in the refrigerator. And so I'd come home from work and all of his plates from lunch were on top of the refrigerator. And I was like, no, you actually go in the refrigerator. And he could never figure out, like, which one, because it's complicated. So there would be apples in the freezers and eggs in the cupboard, and it was just... Anyway, and the thing that really baffled him was how many towels we have. You have towels for your hands, towels for your face, towels for your feet. And he was visiting somewhere, and he said, I kept using my towel in the morning, and I'd put it on the side of the tub, and then the people who owned the house would put it on the floor. And I'd say, what did the towel look like? How big was it? And he showed me. I said, well, that's a bath mat. Because we have so many towels in this country. We have one. We're happy we have one. So anyway, I encourage you. He's a wonderful, very easily accessible teacher. He'll be back. He's back now in the country. He'll be teaching here on Sundays. Not only on Sundays, but look at the schedule on the Kanapa Center website. But he's definitely here on Sundays. And then he does teach some other classes throughout the week. Okay? And most Sundays there's like two sessions too, because it's become so popular. And talk about impermanence. We used to be in a basement with like five people before Geshe-la came, and we've grown all of this way. So it's because of the generosity, and so many of you have been incredibly generous to the center. And, you know, we painted these walls ourselves, and Joanna's husband built this whole altar. So, I mean, we've had just incredible generosity and group spirit to make this really happen. So there are these boxes around. You can put a nickel, a quarter, $100 in there. All of it goes to help the center stay open so that you and future generations can learn how to be better people and go to Christmas parties with a happy mind, you know, and share the love. And what's that? Okay, and there will, you know, what I do at the end of these classes, at the very end, and I have to get that date, is I give like a mini test. Nobody's ever failed it. I don't sit there and grade it with a red pencil. But it's something that years later you can go, oh, the purpose of meditation is to become familiar with blah, 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 blah. And you'll have a little piece of paper that you can use. So especially if you're trying to get the certificate, then you need the test. But we take the test, we sit here and we talk about it together, then you've got that to take home. So I'm just letting you know. And then on the, what day is it, the practice day? Is the 24th? Yes? Okay, so 24th, mark your calendars. We'll be here from, we'll talk about it. It's either 9 to 12 or 10 to 1. I'm going to push for 10 to 1. January. Yeah, in January. We'll do what's called a practice day. And we'll come here and we'll do some meditations like we've been doing, but there'll be more time so you can really get into it and bring your coffee. 24th of January. Yes. Yeah, not Christmas Eve. Yes, it's a Saturday. Okay, and Joanna's going to give an announcement. Before she does that, let's just think for a minute about the goal that you had coming in here, your motivation. The way we close things then is with a dedication. So you took a lot of, it took energy to get here. You know, it's a Monday. Just think of how many other people in North Carolina right now are working on trying to tame their minds and become, you know, better human beings. It's a rare thing. It's a precious thing. So you just accumulated like the seeds of your energy. And now with the dedication, you decide where to deposit those seeds. And you can think about all the other incredible beings on this planet, past, present, and future, you know, that you aspire to be like. You can join your seeds with the ones that they have planted by all of their virtuous actions. And in that way, dedicate it so that it arises, because certainly it will arise as something. It will arise in the way that you want it to be. That the obstacles that you have towards a perfect meditative practice will be eliminated by virtue of these seeds. That you can achieve the goals that you've came in here with, and thereby benefiting yourself and all those people you come in contact with, and then they'll benefit all those around them.